I'll stop it, and you just ask me the questions. And
okay. Mr. Chisholm, you were just going to tell me about an experience you had in the segregated army.
Yes. I had just started by... at the time when General Davis became a general in the United States Army, he was the only black general he was in the United States Army. And they said to us as black troops that he was the first black general in the army. And I told them that it's the biggest lie that's ever been told. And I mean, that's what I told my army buddies and all of that, since the same outfit that I was in. And so they asked me who or where was other generals in any army that was black. And I told them I was taught in black history that Napoleon Bonaparte, Alexander the Great, and all of the great conquerors of the Far East armies had black generals in them. And looked like they just didn't want that to get through to the black troops. Yeah. I found that to be rather amazing.
Mr. Chisholm, there were people in the Army that didn't want you to be talking about that.
That's right. That is true. You see, our education as black people had been limited to only what the whites wanted us to know about ourselves, but nothing about our background as to what our origin was and where we had come from. I found that out.
Mr. Chisholm, it sounds like along the way, before you got into the Army, you had some elders or people teaching you a little bit about...
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. And tell you the whole truth about it, all of that comes through the Fargo Agricultural School. You see, we had every Sunday evening, everybody had to go to what was known as vestibule service. It was just about the same as a Sunday evening sermon. And this is where the head of the school, who was Floyd Brown, that was well up on that history about blacks, their background, their origin, and what have you, would talk and tell us about our past and our ancestors. Yeah, this was very much known among us. Of course, you couldn't talk too much about it because it would cause some kind of disturbance or misunderstanding. And it was one thing that he taught that I think is a jewel to me until this day, and that was good manners is being able to put up with the other person's bad manners. Some people don't want to accept that, but by putting up with the other fellow's bad manners, it has kept me out of a lot of things that could have gotten me into deep trouble, or no doubt caused me to even lose my life. Mm. Yeah. This is true, and that's true with quite a few blacks that I've known.
Mr. Chisholm, now, when you talk about the other fellow's bad manners, you're referring primarily to white people's bad manners?
Yes.
Okay. What are some of those bad manners that you grew up with?
Well, one in particular was, it seems that they could always find money to keep their schools open for the white kids, but they could never find money to keep the schools open for the black kids. The whites would get that full 9 months every year, But the blacks wouldn't get no more than about 3 or 4 or 5 at the most. And it would take the average black student about 2 years to make one grade. Example of it is when I first come to the Fargo Agricultural School, I was promoted to the 7th grade, and I was 15 years old. Now, if I had gotten a full 9 months all along at 15 years old, I would have been in something about like the, 10th grade, or promoted to the 10th grade. Yeah.
Mr. Chisholm, what were the things, the primary things that prevented you early on from getting the full 9 months education?
Early on? Well, it was nothing that prevented me early on, because you see, that's why I made the advancements that I did make, because I came here promoted to the 7th grade. I did the 7th grade, the 8th grade, the 9th grade, and was promoted to the 10th. And I was about 18 years old but then, and I decided that I wanted to let the school go for a while and join the United States Army. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. Of course, at that time, you had to have the permission of your parent to even join the Army at 18 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chisholm, can you tell me about your parents and what they did to earn a living when you were growing up?
Well, my mother and father, they were regular dirt farmers. They grew corn, cotton, gardens, few cattle, and hogs and chickens and all that, just a regular farm. Mm-hmm. And they had what was known as these, what the cow referred to, the 4-H Club, the home demonstration agents in that day and time, the live at home program. In other words, everything that you ate, consumed, you tried to grow it and produce it out there on that farm where you live. Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Chisholm, where did your family live when you were growing up?
That was 6 miles from a little place they call Colt, Arkansas. Number one highway, this is on the other side of, now it's about 12 miles, Colt is 12 miles north of Forest City, Arkansas. And then after you get to Colt, you were still about 6 miles from my father's farm.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chisholm, what are your earliest childhood memories about growing up in Colt, Arkansas?
Well, the earliest childhood memories that I had was struggling, trying to obtain an education. That was my greatest struggle. And I was just really glad when the time come that the little school that I was attending, I was promoted to the 7th grade. I'd already done the 6th grade and promoted to the 7th grade. And at this time, Fargo was taken from the 7th grade through the 12th. In later years, they even knocked that off and made it that you had to be graduated from the 8th grade. You had to be an 8th grade student before you could register to become a student at Fargo Agricultural School.
Mr. Chisholm, when you were growing up in Colt, did black families share with each other, like in the neighborhood, if there was hard times for one family, would people?
Well, yes, they really did pitch in to help one another. You see, at that time, it was a lot of things that was done by the community, and quite a few things that was just done by the people in the community. Say, for an example, even way back there during that time, they had a certain time that they would meet to even kind of work on the roads, you know, roads through the community, certain bad holes in the road and all of that. And, well, they had to, in the harder days, canning kitchens that was set up by the home demonstration agent, that they can and preserve the food, you know, during the time that it was produced. Can. In other words, they set up quite a few what they call canning kitchens in that day and time.
So the canning kitchens would be a place where people in the community would get together and
prepare whatever it was that they were canning, and that went from say green beans, everything, but where the big thing would come on, like somebody would kill a beef or slaughter a beef and take that to the canning kitchen to be canned. The food would be chili, and then it had, in other words, you had everything in the cans that you can go to the store and buy this present day and time, you know, cuts of the beast, so to speak.
Mr. Chisholm, what other kinds of things would black families share or pitch in?
Well, another pitching in that they had, you see, they grew and they made their own syrup, sorghum molasses, so to speak. I can recall that it was an uncle on my father's side, that was my father's uncle. He was a great, as they call, molasses maker. Yeah. And we would go around from one community to the other one. He owned the mill and the cooking pan, you know, that they put the juice in and put a big fire on it, and they would come as cooking. You had the skimmers that you skim the skim off of it. And when they got done, you had the regular, what they call cane molasses. Some people would put it in barrels, some people would put it in buckets even. Yeah, it just all depends on what kind of convenience that you had. But my father, he had these regular barrels with the bong right in the middle of it. He would, when he would make the molasses, they would take and pour them into that barrel by the gallon and keep a count of it hot.
So he was a famous syrup maker.
Say, I was?
My
uncle. His name was Edward Chisholm. He was born and reared in Jackson, Tennessee, it was. And he had migrated in his younger life over into the state of Arkansas.
Mr. Chisholm, was that also true for your immediate family? Had your family migrated into Colt, your father, your grandfather?
Well, my grandfather and my father's uncle, the one that I was telling you about, was the molasses maker. They all migrated about at the same time from I think that was Bala of Tennessee, over into the state of Arkansas. This uncle of mine was, he was mostly, partly, I guess mostly, Choctaw Indian. His hair was as straight as yours, but yet he was dark. And they say that what had something to do with that, they told us this kind of under the cover, that when they started that great march of the Indians, going to move the Indians out of the Delta into Oklahoma, well, they made, the whites made certain agreements with certain Indians that they would sell down on a certain, well, lot of land and become farmers and all of that. They wouldn't have to participate in the migration. Mm-hmm. And that was a situation that confronted this, my father's father, and his uncle, which was my great uncle, the molasses maker I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. Many people aren't aware of that. And many people aren't aware that all of that long death march that they performed on the Indians, moving them out of the Delta, where the best of land was, out to some other rough land and what have you. Years after, they said that it backfired. You know how, don't you?
Oh, because the land that they later moved on to had minerals?
Well, kind of in that way. And in another way, it was during the time when we were fighting Japan and Bataan Fall, and they had that death march of our United States troops from one place to another. Said that that was a retaliation of what happened to the Indian here in the United States. Many people aren't aware of that. Never did even give that a thought.
So it was kind of a revenge in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, something greater than ourselves intervened and kind of gave those who were in power kind of payback for what they had done in the past.
I see. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chisholm, when you were growing up, did elders in your community talk about signs or?
Well, my mother was always a great sign reader. But her signs mostly come from the various quarters of the moon. Four quarters of the moon, well, she would take those signs from, what was that? Her favorite almanac was the Lady's Almanac. Had a lady on the back of it, and she would buy that. It would come annually, so to speak. I don't know where she picked it up or bought it. She could tell you about the change of the moon and when it was going to rain or if it was cold and when it was going to snow and all of that kind of a thing. Just only from an almanac. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chisholm, was that the same as the, was that a different almanac than the McDonald almanac?
Kind of, but almost on the same principle.
Okay, but it was
mm-hmm.
Ladies' Almanac.
Ladies' Almanac. It was referred to as the Ladies' Birthday Almanac. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But there's another thing that I'll tell you too, is that my people were always highly religious and Christian-like, so to speak. They would always see to it, or they saw to it about myself and my sisters and brothers ahead of me, that we were catechized. Yeah. And that was giving us the basic fundamentals about God himself. Now, I remember when I was around about 5 years old, I had to leave my mother and went into another little class. We went to church every Sunday. There wasn't no way out of that. You were assigned to another class from 5 to 8 years old. That was a catechism class. And in that class, you would learn the basic fundamentals about God. It was a question and an answer, a little book, kind of small. First question back there then, I don't know what it is now, was, who is God? And that was in light writing where they asked the question. But in black writing, it would give the answer, our Heavenly Father, the maker of all things. That's who God is. Next question, and I'm just remembering them off the top of my head. I can't go down through all of them. Where is God? This is a kid 5 to 8 years old. And the answer to that one was, in heaven and everywhere. It's answers to many other questions that was answered, but those two were the two beginning ones and the basic fundamentals that looked like just kind of hung on to me. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chisholm, what denomination was your family?
When I was inducted into the Army, when I volunteered from the Army, they only had two faiths. And that was Protestant and Catholic. But now, Protestant, it identified anything that you were other than a Catholic. If you understand what I'm talking about. Whenever you get talking about Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, and all of those others, all of those were referred to as Protestant.
Okay. And your family was?
Protestant, of course, Baptist. My mother was a Methodist. My father was a Baptist. But back there during that time, whatever the man was and the woman married him, young woman married him, well, she went into the faith that he believed in. She followed him with his faith. Well, my father was a Baptist and my mother was a Methodist, and they courted, and when they got married and started a family, she joined the Baptist church. And if it had been the other way around, you know, if he had been Methodist and she was a Baptist, well, she would have changed over to a Methodist had they got married. You understand? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Chisholm, when you were growing up, were there, you mentioned briefly your some of your grandparents. Did stories pass down through your family about your grandparents, about their lifetime?
Well, yes, they certainly did. And it was one that was kind of outstanding on my father's side. He was, it was my father's mother's father. He was an ex-slave. His name was, well, everybody called him Dick Mitchell. He was a Mitchell. And they said that Dick Mitchell was a mighty man, said that he couldn't count. No, he couldn't read, but he could count. And he cut timber and cleared new ground for various white people and all of that, and dug ditches. That's what he got paid for, Dick Mitchell. And they said that he could take a, he wasn't cutting with a saw, he was cutting with an axe. And he didn't allow nobody to touch that axe. You know, because people had a tendency, if they use your axe, they go hacking down in the ground, get it all gapped up and dull it up. That was his reason for that. He raised so much sand. But they said that he was, wasn't no great big man, but he had the muscles so that he could just take a one of his really sharp axes and walk up to a tree with a diameter around about a foot or better, and say in no time that tree was falling. Dick Mitchell, he was a mighty man, stout. Couldn't read or write, but he could count. And they say that he would dig ditches for people and clear new ground for them. And they paid him about an acre or some kind of way of paying. And he would take that money, carry it home, and hide it somewhere around the house, man. Never did put any money in the bank. Dick Mitchell. Well, he only had one sister. Her name was Rosie, which was my father's mother. Well, when he died, the Uncle Lewis Mitchell knew that he had that money all around the house, stuffed in one place. Now, he went to the house and he got enough money that he could just take and go see a farm out there somewhere. He could sell this farm that he was living on and go buy another farm. Always had nice horses and buggies and gold in his mouth from one side to the other one. Always wore neat clothes, dressed well. And that was from Dick Mitchell, of all of that money that he had made and saved. And he didn't give his sister a dime. Greed. Dick Mitchell. He said Dick Mitchell was a mighty man.
Mr. Chisholm, during those days, would whites get really jealous when black people acquired land? Or?
Oh, yes. They certainly were. Now, to a certain extent, when they first settled in the community where I grew up in, that they called Jericho. That's about 12 miles north of Forest City and about 12 miles to the right over into what they call Jericho, the one right there behind Forest City, Arkansas, right there nearby, that was called Tellico. But anyway, they said that when they left from there and went up in Cross County, that wasn't in St. Francis County, they had to be kind of careful about a horse and a buggy, anything that was of any value, because if some white person run into them over in the other county and ask them, well, by the name, says, whose horse is that, nigga? That's what they, and they would always say that it belonged to some white fella that lived in the county where they live. When nobody bothers them then. But if he claimed it himself, he'd make him get out of that buggy, take his horse and everything. Never would get it back either. It was just that loose in the law and all that. Kind of awful. But that's just the way that it was back there during that time.
So, Mr. Chisholm, could black people depend upon law, the sheriff, to enforce the law if they got something stolen from them? Or?
Not too much. Not too much. When they would enforce the law for the whites, but didn't do too much enforcing the law for the blacks. Because I can remember one time the story was told is the fella that was supposed to have been a deputy that lived in our community. His name was Clem Simmons. It was some whites had it in for some of the blacks that lived up in our community. And in particular, this was an uncle of mine that was named Forrest Chisholm. And Forrest Chisholm was about half what they call Choctaw Indian and half black. But he was really a marksman with a Winchester or any kind of gun. And so they had gathered up a posse and had to share with them going to go and get Forrest Chisholm about something or whatever it was. But I think everybody had been alerted in the community because everybody had Winchesters. Every black house in the community at one time had a Winchester in it. And the reason why they did that, a lot of those blacks that came in there from over in the Indians, like we're talking about, from over in Tennessee, they could come in there and run them out, take the crop, house, and everything. The people that were sponsoring them were the ones that put a Winchester in every house in the community so that that wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so this fellow, Clem Summon, was at the head of the posse, this story goes, and says he held up his hand when it got to a certain point, said, now I tell you, see, all of those houses in the community that we're going to destroy, they have a Winchester in them. And said that Forrest Chisholm is the captain. And said he really knows how to shoot those guns. And said, I'm afraid that if we go over there and defend with them, that all of us aren't going to come back. So now it's left entirely up to you now. If you want to go on with it, we'll go on with it. But if you don't want to, and we all stay alive, it would be best for us to turn around and go on back and leave those people alone. And they all decided that it would be the best thing to turn around and go back and leave all those black folks alone, not attempt to run them out of the community. I mean, these aren't just no wise tales. These are things that really happen.
Mr. exorcism, which community did that happen in?
Well, that was over in the community is still there, but Jericho.
Jericho, Arkansas.
Well, that's what they call the community, but Jericho kind of took in some of Colt, Arkansas, a little of Caldwell, and some of Palestine, Arkansas.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Chisholm, were there other times when black people or black communities had to defend themselves like that?
Yes, it was. Some that I don't even know of. Those are just those that was told to me what happened. You see, St. Francis County, at Forest City, Arkansas, that's where the courthouse was. And that was the county seat, in other words. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a few things that happened that was unfair to the blacks, and they were dispossessed of quite a few things. And I heard a fella come in, and no later than right here today, he went to downtown Far City and was trying to buy one of these cameras that, you know, take an instantaneous picture. But the people act so funny and strange with him. He said away, just figured in his mind, away with you. And instead of buying it in Far City, he left from there and went up into Wynn, Arkansas, which was right over in Cross County. Wynn is the county seat there. And that's where he bought the instantaneous camera that, you know, you can take a picture right here, and next thing you know, it's going to come off. Oh, he took one of mine there just now. Yeah, right after you take it, you can see what you got. You don't have to wait no long time. Well, he said that he went to Forest City and to some of those stores around there and was looking for one like that and really found one, but the people act so funny and strange about it. And he just went ahead and let them alone and got in his car or truck, whatever it was, and went all the way up, that's around about 12 or 13 miles, over in Cross County, and bought his camera. And he had it with him there today. And it was that way, even about buying cars, trucks, tractors, or anything else. It seems that Forest City, they just didn't want to patronize the black. So far it was tractors, trucks, advancing credit and all of that to them. No, that's right. Just before I went to Jamestown College, Jamestown, North Dakota, it was a brother-in-law of mine. He had quite a few cattle. He sold.
Oh, I get it.
Many people interviewing me around here today. Information consent statement. All right.
Okay. Mr. Chisholm, you were talking about how black people had a hard time getting credit.
Right about time when I was going to, just a little before I went to Jamestown College, Jamestown, North Dakota, I had a brother-in-law that had quite a few cattle and all of that. And he was trying to get him half a ton truck, you know. Instead of getting up and hitching up the wagon, going 15 miles into town, have a truck that you could drive. And, Well, he tried to get one and, you know, set up the credit so he could get it and all. Nobody would bridge any kind of way. So he just went right across the line over in Cross County and told them what he had and all of that. And made a down payment on it, got the truck just like that. But then he had to turn and go to St. Francis County to get his license and all of that, you see. The fact that he didn't live in Cross County. And here they kind of got after him and made him pay double something because he didn't buy the truck in St. Francis County.
He's caught in a double bind.
Yeah. They wouldn't let him make any kind of arrangement to buy it over there in St. Francis County, but when he went in the other county and made the arrangement, the people agreed with him and all because the land that he had and the cattle and stock that he had, you know, they would advance him on a truck and he'd pay so much a month for it or so much every fall when he gathered his crop. And then the people there in St. Francis County, the courthouse, made him pay double something for the license or the title or something just because he didn't buy it in St. Francis County.
Mr. Chisholm, was there a difference then between St. Francis County and Cross County? It sounds like...
Yes, it was. You see, your county seat of St. Francis County was in Forest City. But the county seat of Cross County was in Wynn, Arkansas. Two counties. Yeah.
And why were things, it seems that things were a little better for black people in Cross County.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Why was that?
Well, the reason why, it seemed that those people kind of looked deep into the situation, said, well, if I try to hold the other fella back for some unconcerned reason or some concerned reason, well, I'm just holding my own self back. And so I might as well to go ahead and work with him and give him the opportunities of the advantages that I can afford him. And I'll be helping myself too. You understand? I'll be getting the business. It seemed like that was the attitude that people took in Cross.
Hey, Mr. John.
Well, excuse me, Biden, y'all.
No,
not
I'm
so
not
far.
Getting any. I always wear these long sleeve shirts and all of that for hot sun too. I don't like that hot sun shine on my own. I've always worked out in hot sun and I always find out that it's always best to be well covered. And I'm out there working in the hot sun. And so down in the South Sea, if you're in the Navy, and you go out there and get some blistered or some stroke or something like that, and just, you find yourself paying for it.
Mr. Chisholm, I was wondering this question about the differences in race relations in Cross County and St. Francis County. Why weren't whites in St. Francis County thinking the same way as Cross County, or is that just accidental, do you think? Or
well, I never was able to really get to the roots of that, just why it was like that. Now, it could have been, you see, some people aren't aware of it, but... you see, in certain areas like that, the Jews are in there too. You understand what I'm saying? some areas the Jews have the business thing all sewed up, and the Gentiles can't get into it. And then in some areas, the Gentiles got it all sewed up and the Jew can't get into it. I mean, many people ain't aware of those fine drawn lines like that.
Okay.
Now, I'll tell you an example. The Laniers, the Lindsay brothers, were all Jews. But and then several of them downtown Forest City. But then the people that controlled mostly the banks and all of that, they were Gentile people, and so you just had to go along with the Gentiles, so to speak. And I'm led to believe, of course, I never did do any research into it, that it was just the other way around up in Cross County. That no doubt the Jews had the control of the town, you know, the money end of it and all the banks and what have you. And the Gentiles were kind of closed out of it. It just all depends on who had the economic control of the county administration, so to speak.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chisholm, were black people involved in politics and cult when you were growing up?
No, they weren't. And the reason why, they just weren't well enough educated to be. They weren't. Matter of fact, you know, you probably aren't aware of it, but the reason why my father and my mother and several others in my family didn't